Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman of Vocalo.org, 89.5 FM.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
Our focus today is on the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport and the impressive sustainability projects they have accomplished there.
There's a lot of interest today in the U.S. Green Building Council's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, or LEED, certification, which has become the recognized standard for measuring building sustainability and demonstrating that a building or facility is green. There are some facilities, however, airports among them, that are so complex that it's really difficult to assess them using the LEED criteria.
Still, that doesn't mean airports can't become green. In fact, Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport has become a model green airport. DFW, the third busiest airport in the world in terms of aircraft movements and the seventh busiest in terms of passenger traffic, covers more than 29.2 square miles and supports more than 300,000 jobs.
In 2008, DFW launched an airport-wide sustainability policy and program as part of the airport's strategic plan. The key elements of the sustainability initiative to date include environmental management, energy efficiency and renewable energy, waste minimization and recycling, wildlife management, safety management, emergency response, asset development, and a clean vehicle fleet program. Our guest today is Jim Kreitz, DFW Executive Vice President for Operations, to discuss the airport's green achievements. Jim, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Could you tell us something about the genesis of the DFW Sustainability Policy and Program, and who at the airport championed this and made it happen?
Our efforts, I would say, started roughly about 10 or 11 years ago, and what really brought it about was our area is a non-attainment area for ozone, our region. And so, as you can imagine, there were some environmental initiatives going on locally and that sort of thing. And I lead about six different departments at the airport, and what I was discovering was that one department's issues, quite frankly, were another department's opportunities, so to speak. So as you can imagine, with air quality and you're trying to reduce oxides and nitrogen, you know, emissions and that sort of thing, in our discussion of how we were going to address that type of an issue from an airport's perspective, it was my energy vice president who started talking to me about some of their needs to reduce their cost of energy and their consumption and things of that nature. And of course, you know, the obvious occurs. That has an impact on emissions. And so my environmental vice president was very excited over making this relationship of the two departments who are trying to accomplish what might seem as different types of objective functions, but they really are the same thing. And so what spawned from that was all of my department heads and I getting together and talking about what are we doing in terms of the perspective of the other departments, if you will. And so we just started discovering that some of these initiatives to save dollars on energy or on asset management or things of this nature were quite frankly very synergistic, and the environmental endeavors that were trying to be pursued, whether it be waste reduction, emissions reduction, you name it, all of these things were happening, if you will, but kind of invisible to us all, and so that by working together we could provide a much more holistic effort to what we were trying to accomplish.
And what are some of the plans? What are some of the things you've done? What are some of the energy savings that you've achieved so far, and how have you gone about getting them?
Okay, I started with the energy management aspect of this, and I would offer to you there's been a host of things that we've done that saved quite literally over 25 trillion BTUs, or about 5 million barrels of oil, with a cost avoidance of about 85 million over this time period.
What was the time period that you're talking about?
This is over the last 15 years.
Okay. You saved $85 million, you think, in 15 years?
Yes, that's hard dollars.
And how'd you do it?
Okay. One of the aspects is a continuous commissioning programs where we started going into our buildings and using the concept of continuous commissioning. That is, if you will, adjusting buildings' HVAC, their thermal energy systems, to function in accordance with actual operating parameters. As you can imagine, when you design a building, you have estimates. Your engineers have estimates of what's going to take place, and they calibrate it like that. But when actual operating conditions occur, actual temperatures, how the building is occupied, utilized, things of that nature, those systems need to be adjusted. And so what we started to do in our major facilities, like our Energy Plaza, where we actually create thermal energy, our new International Terminal D, or our Rent-A-Car Center, we've been going through our buildings at the airport to, if you will, retro-commission these HVAC systems and achieve remarkable savings in those areas. And so that's one element of it.
Is that a case, I'm sorry, just as a layman, is that a case of knowing that at 3 a.m. the cooling needs are different than they are at noon when the building's crowded? Is it that sort of thing?
It's that sort of thing, and it's also, you can imagine in a building, everyone has a thermostat in their room, right? And the ballasts in the building are pointing air in certain directions also, right? And what we do is we go in there and measure these things and find out, as an example, you can have two rooms adjacent to one another. Someone's cold, and inadvertently someone had shifted the ballasts or the vents to throw whatever heat or cooling air that they wanted over in another area. And so they're always either too hot or too cold, whatever the condition is. Meanwhile, the person who's in that adjacent area, their vents are pointed in a different direction, and so they're adjusting their thermostat. So let's say it's in the winter and you're wanting to get warmer, and you turn up your thermostat and you throw hot air over into another area of the building, and those people start turning down their thermostat. Well, they're freezing you out while you're making them hot, right?
And all the while burning energy that wouldn't otherwise need to be burned.
Precisely. And so by looking at this holistically, to your point, what are the temperature levels? How are the systems operating? How are you balancing your loads and that sort of thing throughout the building? What we find in these efforts, it's roughly about a one-year payback, but as an example, just in our Terminal D, we went into that building, that's our new international terminal, 2 years after it had been opened, and reduced the energy load within that building about 10 to 15% off of new systems. So the systems are operating, you know, as they're, if you will, designed. What we did was adjust them. And what we realized on a per-year basis is roughly a $2.5 million savings per year in energy savings on that building alone, right? So that's pretty substantial.
So I'm just curious about this term continuous commissioning. It sounds to me like what you're doing is real time or near real time adaptation through a control system to optimize the use of energy. Is that a fair way to describe it?
That's where systems are going. I would offer to you what it is a first effort to go in and actually adjust systems that were designed and installed, adjust them to actual operations. So that's a one-time event, if you will. And then to your point, we are putting systems, controls, if you will, that allow us to monitor in a relevant way all these various sensors that already exist in the building. So to your point, as things, if you will, creep out of adjustment, we're made aware of it, so that becomes the term continuous commissioning. So that we are knowledgeable now of systems, if you will, getting out of kilter, and then are allowed to, on a continuous basis, make refinements to make sure our energy efficiency gains remain.
So as opposed to a tactic that I might call set it and forget it, you know, build it and it's a brand new system and it's got to be good and you walk away from it and never look back.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how about on the waste angle of things? What have you done to reduce waste at DFW?
We have a host of endeavors. Right now, we recycle roughly 13,000 tons of materials every year, and they come in all shapes and sizes. You can imagine your standard things that you see with paper and cardboard and plastics, that sort of things. But we're also looking at things like the wood pallets, various materials that are within the building itself. As an example, we had to re-roof our terminal buildings here recently, and there is a styrofoam insulation piece that goes into that roof system so as to properly insulate the building. Normally, when you have a program like that, you just rip all that off and throw that off into a landfill. And what our asset management team did was they looked at that material, that insulation material, And they found out that 95% of it was perfectly fine. And so they went to Owens Corning, who had originally produced that materials, had them test them, and they confirmed that this material had, you know, 100% of their useful life left. They were able to reuse 95% of that material for the insulation of the new roof. So, you know, that's an example. Another example would be on concrete. When we built our, when we rework all of our taxiways or runways when they have to be rebuilt, we'll take that old concrete. You'll see this in the highways in Chicago, too. They do this. You'll take that and you'll grind that up. That'll become the base material, right?
Yes.
Even our roof ballast from the roofs that I was talking about before, that became fill material for other projects. So we take whatever, we're taking a more holistic look at whatever we have, like our waste oil from all of our concessionaires, rerouting that waste oil from, let's say, McDonald's or whatever, and routing that to folks that it's the notion of one man's waste is another man's gold opportunity. So whatever the substance is, we're trying to look at it and we say, is this a value to us or a value to someone else? As it relates to recycling. So it's not just a paper plastic thing, it's an everything thing.
That's a very interesting strategy. When you talk about oil from the concessionaires, you're talking about cooking oils, I assume.
Cooking oils, and you can imagine with around 28 different restaurants at DFW Airport and all that supply of oil, I mean that's quite a sizable sum. So we're a very large enterprise. And so that's the type of thing that, once again, you just ask the question, what is this a value to someone? And I would offer, if I could, offer a name to you. There was a doctor, Eugene Tsang, out of the University of West Los Angeles, who used to also be with L.A., but he's we have been using him as a consultant to us. He calls himself Dr. Garbage. But the point is, he took this approach many years ago, and it's exciting when you start brainstorming opportunities with this gentleman, because he's done it all, if you will. But helping our staff look at everything not so much as an issue but a potential opportunity, and changing that mindset of people has been, I guess, the real change. Step change for us, or the change agent for us, is how do we look at things? And instead of, like I say, instead of looking at things as something as an issue to do away with or minimize, what can we do with it? You know, it's a positive attitude towards it.
How about, I know there's some pollutants that are just naturally occurring in the environment of an airport, runway runoff, fuels, lubricants, de-icing fluids. What have you guys done to control these or to minimize their impact?
What we've done there is, as you can imagine, a suite of things. The first thing we did was we built what we call de-icing pads, or sites for de-icing, wherein all of that runoff, that de-icing effluent, would be captured. None of that's going to go into the stormwater, into the receiving waters around the airport. And with that containment like that, it's a more concentrated solution. And so what we do with that material, we run that through a series of pipes down to our waste treatment facility, where we have a reverse osmosis plant, which will then concentrate that solution, and the water that's extracted from it is tested and gets verified as essentially being able to be released into the environment because it's clean. And then that consolidated material is then, that piece is sent to a landfill. And I would offer to you, and it's solidified and that sort of thing, but unfortunately for DFW Airport, we don't do a consistent volume of de-icing to warrant marrying this up, let's say, with a radiator coolant firm, as you would otherwise imagine, because it's glycol, this is what's in your radiator fluid, this sort of thing.
That would be like a Dr. Garbage thing. That would be like, okay, how can we find someone that this would be treasure for? But you're saying the volume isn't enough to do
it? Right, it's not consistent throughout the year to serve as a reliable, if you will, feed source to a radiator coolant manufacturer, if you will. But if you were more up north and you're doing more consistent de-icing, let's say in Boston, New York, or something of this nature, then you have a more steady stream of supply over, let's say, around a 6 or 7 month period of the year, where you can continuously provide a reliable feed stream to one of these entities then they could make better use.
Or maybe somebody someday will start a company that collects all that from airports and has enough of a inventory to make it a business all the time.
Precisely.
Is there any way to recycle that material so you can use it again for de-icing?
The short answer is that we're working towards that end as an industry. Because there's some additives in, and it's not just straight glycol, either propylene glycol or ethylene glycol, there's some things in there for make it less flammable, or deal with those types of issues around an aircraft. What we're looking to do with industry and with the FAA is to have a means of, like that reverse osmosis, strip out that pure ethylene or pure propylene glycol, and with that then add back the additives that need to be added to it to make it a certified fluid for application to an aircraft. Because what you really need to be able to do is it's those additives and the pure glycol in a specific concentration that keeps those wings from icing up, right, or accumulating snow or slush on the wings. And so that's the science, right? And so we hope to, through our site de-icing pads and a reverse osmosis facility, once again, capture that, then have a formulation on site so you can test the materials, do you have the right concentration of all the additives, and then reapply it. And I think the airlines are most interested in that concept because this is quite pricey fluid, and there's a business case, if you will, if we can get to the point where we can recertify.
Are there other airports that are approaching the level of green that you've gotten at DFW?
Absolutely. I think you all hail from Chicago. That's my hometown from many years ago. But the O'Hare Master Plan is a good example of a lot of green projects in their new capital development program. In fact, they built an awards mechanism for their designers and engineers to go ahead and present sustainable ideas as part of the construction program. What we also have are airports such as SeaTac out in, on the West Coast, who have done remarkable things. We've had Boston Logan. They even have a LEED certified terminal building. And so I would offer that what we're seeing throughout the United States is that as these projects materialize at a DFW or a Boston or a Los Angeles World Airports or SeaTac, something of that nature, airports are now starting to share that information for one another because for two reasons. One, we all want to be environmental stewards, but quite frankly, in an airline industry where it's very thin margin, you're doing things for good business reasons. And the types of things that I've communicated to you that we do here at DFW Airport have great business sense. And so people are interested in reducing their cost structure, reduce how much they consume, reduce how much they pay in putting waste out into landfills, things of that nature. And so there's a very aggressive program, if you will, to share this information with one another. And so I would offer the number of projects and the number of airports that are participating are growing because the business case is being presented to them, and that's quite frankly a big motivator for success.
What's your next planned project?
Pardon me?
Your next planned sustainable project, is there anything in the pipeline?
Huge. We're going towards renewing, if you will, the remaining four terminals here at DFW Airport, and these are now between 35 and 40 years of age, and so all of the aging infrastructure is there. And so what we've done is we've developed green building standards and green procurement standards for the redesign of these buildings and also for all the materials that are going to be used to go into these buildings. And so what we're anticipating is, just as an example of things to come, we have already retrofitted a lot of the lights in these buildings. And these go with variable ballast. So if you're in an office that has a glass windows and it's a bright sunny day, the ballasts automatically dim the lights, right? And they're also high efficiency T8 lights. What we're finding is that creates a 40% reduction in energy consumption for the lighting within that building. And so that's just an example of things. So as we go through this, we're looking at these buildings that we're going to redevelop over the next 7 to 13 years is what the program calls for. Our first building opening up, though, in 2014 is a total soup-to-nuts approach to these buildings. As an example, replacing escalators with high-capacity elevators. Much safer from a risk management standpoint, less trips, you know, no trips and falls, that sort of thing. Much lower energy consumption because they only consume energy when they're running, and more convenient to customers because they don't want to go, it's an easier transition from vertical transition, right? So it's a holistic approach to that. Same thing with the entrances to the buildings, the types of seating, the open air architecture that's going on. What you see within the aviation industry is an empowering of the consumer. So IT systems are to the point now where we can empower the consumer to receive a higher level of customer service, quite frankly, by doing it themselves, right? So by doing that, that's eliminating a lot of infrastructure within the buildings, quite frankly. You don't need it anymore. So you'll see energy loads come down, much higher, if you will, better ambiance, open terminal, easier flow through customer service opportunities for our consumers. But once again, it's the whole notion of use less and get more out of what you had, right?
So it's really interesting the way you describe it, because it sounds like eventually the customer that walks through the airport will have a noticeable experience and we hope a more valuable experience. So this is particularly interesting because what you've described, as we understand it, is a highly integrated perspective that brings together concerns about environment, energy, and economy. It's an illustration, I think, of ways to do good and also to do well at the same time. So we really thank you for sharing your experience and your strategy with us, and we wish you well in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you much.